when I was a kid. Guys like me were brought up to follow codes.
Hey, jerk off.
What'd you say?
What?
Antonio Soprano.
I wonder if I can talk to you alone for a moment, Mrs. Soprano. On the basis of the Sanford-Binet, he's high IQ.
You can't prove it by me. He's got a D plus average.
Well, he doesn't apply himself, but he is smart. The results tell us. He's a leader.
Uncle Dick.
Growing up with the family takes a toll. Maybe an ambassador.
Toast. Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
movie squad.
Salute me, familia.
Salute indeed. Welcome to a special episode of the Movie Squad podcast, the official RTRFM Movie Squad podcast, where myself, Tristan Fidler, is inviting some guests to talk about a very special movie that is possibly in cinemas at the time you're listening to this, possibly on digital to video or a streaming service, maybe connected to Warner Brothers and HBO, potentially. But we're looking at the film The Many Saints of Newark. Newark? Newark. Newark. And this is directed by Alan Taylor, but comes from the pen of David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos television series. And this is a prequel that involves several of the characters that have come to be known and loved through the defining show of the, I guess, 2000s, or HBO, starring James Gandolfini. And so I'm joined by some Sopranos heads, and then also an outside perspective. But I'd like to welcome to the microphone Axel Carrington.
Hello.
And Jackson Horden.
Happy to be here, Tristan.
And Libby Noble.
Extraordinarily happy to talk about this anytime.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about this movie. The first part, I think the first 15 minutes or so, will be very spoiler-free. We'll talk about it in generalities and dance around certain things. And then I'll make a warning. You know, we'll count to 10 and you can turn off the episode and come back to us when you've seen it. And we'll get deep into spoiler territory, both for The Sopranos television show and this movie, The Many Saints of Newark. And, well, firstly, Axel, I apologize because I reached out to you with this idea that you were a fan of The Sopranos, but you've actually not seen The Sopranos at all.
Well, I think I should be giving the world an apology for not doing my my due diligence over the past 31 years of life. I've never seen it. I mean, I see the pilot. I watched the pilot once about 4 years ago and had every intention of watching the rest of the show that never did. But I really appreciate you asking me to do this because, it's a prequel, right? That's not a spoiler.
No.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to, you know, I would relish any opportunity to spend 45 minutes with you, Axel. And I'm dying for your perspective, having not watched The Sopranos. But I like to register my discomfort. This is a pretty unethical experiment because we are, like, I don't think we should be encouraging anyone to see this film before they've watched The Sopranos. So well done for taking one for the RTRFM listeners, Axel.
And to come to Tristan's defense a little bit, Axel, that is definitely the energy you project into the world. I've known you for a long time. We lived together for nearly 5 years. And honestly, I'm shocked. I was visibly shocked to find out that you'd never seen this show. Because you're just the guy that has seen all the movies and TV shows, I guess, by proxy.
Yeah.
So
it is a pretty safe assumption for you to have made, Tristan, that someone who loves film and television would have seen The Sopranos, because of that just speaks to the institution that it is, right?
What? Where do you think you get off? Acting like this.
Really weird stuff. Well, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that I think I'll get around to watching the series now. Mm. I think it's piqued my interest somewhat.
Well, you're doing it in chronological order, basically, in terms of the history of the television show. Like, you're starting with a prequel. It's like someone watching The Phantom Menace first, going, "Look, I want to start from A to Z." Mm. So you're starting in a chronological order.
But for the narrator in Many Saints of Newark, opens the film within the first 2 minutes, has described one of the major moments towards the end of the series.
Oh, yeah.
So Axel's looking confused by that, which is great. It means that you didn't register it, which is good. Mm. I'm feeling more comfortable, Tristan.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing, this watching this movie. Well, we have Axel as a perspective on whether this just works as a movie without having any connection to The Sopranos, which I'm fascinated by because I'm, as Libby has mentioned, that might be a difficult experience possibly. But we've got Jackson and Libby representing people who know and love The Sopranos and have maybe watched it more than once straight through.
Well, I've seen it at least 3 times, over the years. I don't know about you, Libby.
I would have seen it probably a couple more than that.
Yeah.
I watched it real time. So I literally stumbled across the pilot episode very late one night on Channel 9 before there was streaming and we had a couple of channels. And reflecting on that, the sorts of conversations that I recall having with people that year are such evidence of what a watershed moment it was because I literally remember just being so drawn to it. And it was honestly, it was just this late night thing because it was incredibly... it had emerged as a result of like Telecommunications Reform Act in the US and like the decency thing had just been lifted and that's how what gave rise to telly like this. And our censorship hadn't been as strong, but we had it on very late at night. Yeah. I literally just stumbled on the pilot pre-streaming. And I remember like calling friends and saying, it's really good, which was surprising. And it was because there wasn't really good television at that time. And I remember saying things like, so you have to actually watch it in order, which was new as well, the idea of like characters developing and the narrative running through. I mean, Coronation Street perhaps and those sorts of things, but there just hadn't been anything like that. And that's also further evidence of that is that Channel 9 in the first season, because I was incredibly hooked and I hadn't like regularly tuned in to watch anything ever really in my, well, perhaps since A Country Practice when I was a child, right? And Channel 9 just got up to like episode 7 in the first season and then just didn't play them in order.
Great.
And I called, like there was no, I called them and they were like, yeah, lots of people have called. And I think it wasn't a mistake. I think it was literally just like, they have to be played in order, right? We didn't realize.
Well, definitely, you're taking me back to the time when, we're reliant on free-to-air television to show these like imports from HBO where, they could show sex, violence, language, nudity, all the stuff that you couldn't get away with because, these were MA-rated shows. So free-to-air television would play them at like 9:30 and there was a trend where they would go, this critically acclaimed show that everyone's talking about, we'll show it at 9:30. It's not rating so well after 2 weeks. Okay, we're going to show it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Now. Like, and then people having to kind of like set the VCR timers for a specific time to catch up with these things. So, but it's all different now. You know, the legacy of the show, I think, also, unfortunately, is tied to the passing of its lead star, James Gandolfini, because I think that tragedy has also meant that there's been no chance to go like, let's bring back Tony Soprano. Because I feel like there would have been a truckloads of money poured to him and David Chase to revive this show because it's been such a favorite, and now we've got this idea of a movie that is a prequel to the characters and that is about Tony Soprano, played by James Gandolfini, but here, played by his son, his actual son, but also involving different characters. And yeah, so this is an odd duck to talk about, even if you are a fan of The Sopranos.
Is that a reference? I get that reference.
The odd duck reference. So yeah, we'll get into it and also talk about the Sopranos as we're doing it, because yeah, that is, I mean, I've watched it again recently. I think last year wrapped up season 6, the final episodes. And yeah, it's such an enjoyable show, even to revisit when you know that you have to tie yourself into like a strict chronological order. You can't just like dip in and out, but it's still so entertaining, even though it's so, you know, so full on and dark, and still has the power to shock and disturb, even when it's kind of being quite funny and heartwarming and odd moments. So yeah, let me describe the plot of this movie. So this is the tagline of the movie: Who made Tony Soprano? Young Anthony Soprano is growing up in one of the most tumultuous eras in Newark, New Jersey history, becoming a man just as rival gangsters start to rise up and challenge the all-powerful DiMeo crime family. Caught up in the changing times is the uncle he idolizes, Dickie Montalcini, whose influence over his nephew will help shape the impressionable teenager into the all-powerful mob boss, Tony Soprano. So that's the plot summary in a nutshell. But maybe I'll start with you, Axel. Without having any kind of connection to the actual show, did you think what did you think of this movie?
Well, first of all, I don't know if Ray Liotta needed another do-over with his makeup at some point, but that was the first thing I noticed, like, oh, really? That's the best you could light that scene? Like, yeah, look, I don't know. It was kind of curious because I feel like, you know, with the people who like love this show love it so much. I love it very deeply. And I think for the reasons that you mentioned, Libby, I think I was so conscious of that the whole time, but then also trying to just treat it as like, oh, this is a film that I'm watching. And, you know, like it wasn't a complete waste of time. I thought it was like, you know, it had some fun, enjoyable bits with it. It looked really good. Mm. Despite Ray Liotta's ogre face, but I don't know, is it also, how many times has a person grown up to like play their own dad in a film?
I have to say I hadn't read anything about this in advance, so when the trailer hit, 11 people sent it to me within an hour, knowing what a fan I am, and I had sort of not really committed it all to memory, so I'd forgotten that Ray Liotta was in it, and I hadn't looked any further, and I didn't know that, and then was several scenes into, you know, of him, scenes that he was in, and was just a little bit struck by it, and then had a quick look, and then was quite emotional about it, because what a thing to do. And I imagine on set, I don't know, obviously David Chase hasn't directed it, so I don't know if he's on set or not. Mm. And there aren't really original cast members in it. Hopefully that's not a spoiler that I can think of. But yeah, it must have been a very emotional experience. So yeah, I can't imagine, I don't know of any other situation to answer your question in a long-winded way.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, he was... Again, not a spoiler alert. There's parts of it where he's actually pretty adorable, you know, like, and I guess that's part of like maybe the character's development or whatever, but, and that's maybe just like my knowledge of The Sopranos is really, really peripheral pop culture knowledge, where particularly when like watching James Gandolfini in like other films, like even like, you know, the bit parts that he did in like True Romance or something like that, where he's always got that air of like just menace and, but also like a sense of kind of like the edge of control kind of thing. Like he's always at the end of his tether type vibe. And then your son rocks up and he's just like got a real floppy hair and he's like, you know, listening to records really loud in his room and all this stuff. And you're like, oh, how is this person ever going to, you know, get to that point?
Yeah, it's funny because I had seen him as an actor before. Like I watched the other HBO show, The Deuce, by created by David Simon, and he's in that as a small character. And it feels like with HBO shows, like, you'll see a lot of the same faces between, you know, particularly, you know, Sopranos cast members, where that you feel like there's almost like a factory studio idea of like, well, we've got this supporting guy, we'll use him over here as well. But yeah, it's such a, you know, it's a big drawing card, and obviously the film is marketed on, this is the rise of Soprano. This is like Soprano as a teenager, but and a lot of attention is on this dynamic. But then the film is also not simply about him. It's set in two time periods where we see Tony Soprano as a little boy and then as a teenager. But it's really about this character, Dickie Montalcini, who is the father of Chris Montalcini from The Sopranos. And he's played by Alessandro Nivola. And we get all the kind of members of the crew that we know from The Sopranos, but they're all like played by young actors. So Silvio and Big Pussy, you know, they're all played by these young actors kind of like inhabiting these roles. But then it's also about racial tensions and introduces new characters, including one played by Lamar Odom. So it's bringing a lot to the table. So if you were watching this thinking you were going to get the Tony Soprano story, it actually, I think, is only like maybe a third of what the actual film is. I don't know if you had that experience, Jackson.
You're exactly right. I think that it was, at face value, a really ambitious movie, trying to tell this really important part of like the sort of the greater Sopranos universe that is referenced so frequently in the show, of this like very important part of the characters' lives. You know, these moments in time that were referenced, they like made them the characters that they were when we watched The Sopranos, and that's what made it so exciting. And furthermore, even though it was kind of nested within this like greater story of race relations, that was, you know, then further like referenced in The Sopranos itself. And so it going into it, I felt like this was kind of like if they were going to do a prequel to the show, this was the perfect time and the perfect place and the perfect group of characters to explore. Because like you said, you didn't, Axel, you said you weren't quite sure how you could see how like the floppy haired teenager in the 70s becoming Tony Soprano. You know, having watched The Sopranos and being such a big fan, you do kind of get the sense that he was this sort of scared, awkward teenager that then did become sort of a very hard man over the course of his life. So it presented an interesting opportunity to learn about, you know, characters that I'm personally very attached to. So I was very excited before I watched the film about what, you know, what could potentially come to pass.
Well, just want to make a correction. I said Lamar Odom. I meant Leslie Odom Jr. From, I think, Hamilton he was in. But, yeah, so we also get his mother, played by Vera Farmiga, and then also his own father, played by John Berthenal. And... yeah, this film, well, actually, I want to hear what my guests think of it first. So, Jackson, I mean, you said that you were excited to see this. I mean, how did you feel after?
So I guess a little inside baseball, this podcast recording was a little bit difficult to organize. We had to reschedule a few times.
I'm going to do the scheduling bit.
I had said to Axel just before we walked in that you know, talking about things that are a disorganized mess is really a perfect place to talk about this film. It just felt really like it lacked a lot of focus for the reasons that I just referenced earlier. It's telling this massive story with like a lot of characters, you know, and each getting their own little bit of attention and screen time, and kind of felt like we got about 60% of what we needed for the development of every character to really appreciate their arcs over the course of the film. And for that reason, it kind of felt simultaneously like we didn't see enough, you know, like they could have really fleshed it out in a lot of ways. But it also just felt very bloated and quite long,
Wow.
You know, because it was sort of this awkward in-between mark of like, you know, I would like to have seen more of Tony, but also maybe the film would have been tighter if they just, you know, didn't have the character in the film at all. You know, I'm purely focused on Dickie Moltisanti.
Yeah.
That was my overall impression of the film immediately after watching.
Yeah.
You do wonder about the behind-the-scenes discussions that, you know, this, I think, script or this idea had been kicking around, but whether, like, you know, to get it made, there had to be this inflation of, like, the, well, it's Tony Soprano as a young guy, you get to see that, rather than this other character that we hear talked about but never actually seen in the show, which is Dickie Moltisanti. Libby, how did you think? Do you agree with Jackson, or did you have a different reaction?
I agree with Jackson entirely. Very similar to what I was going to say. I think the presence of that entire ensemble was pretty gratuitous, but I was there for it. I mean, I wanted to see 30 seconds of all of those people. And Axel, that just, you know, people walking in and out of rooms mentioned who we just know an extraordinary amount about and love deeply and have watched being, developed masterfully as characters. And there was very little of that. And I feel like it was very ambitious to kind of serve us with Sopranos porn character ensemble.
Right.
And I wanted it, but yet too ambitious. And I think it was at the expense of developing any one character particularly well.
Mm.
I think, though, the choice of exploring Dickie Moltisanti's life was a clever one and an important one. So, as you say, the ghost of him is enormous in The Sopranos throughout. And it's constantly clear that Anthony's relationship with him has been very formative. So I spent moments thinking, as you say, Jackson, perhaps it would be neater if young Tony wasn't in it at all. But the exchanges that they do have, I think, were important to give context to some of the things that were formative. The other thing that I think was a little gratuitous was actually the racial tension. So I felt, the cynic in me wants to say that I think that was about visibility, not representation. The representation of it because of the enormity of the thing, that wasn't particularly well explored in my view. The cynic in me wants to say that it was how you get a film green lit right now. And I wanted that, there were missed opportunities to kind of look at the context of that in that period for the mob. And racial tensions are in many episodes of The Sopranos explored particularly well, you know, with First Nations people around the Italians with Christopher Columbus Day and things like that. So I thought I felt uncomfortable about that.
That it was kind of a bit superficial rather than actually like dealing with, because it still feels like it's like a new character that we've got to get to like know, but it's still.
What was the point of that character in there?
Yeah, sidelined in a way. Well, just to say, like, this is general kind of review stuff, and I guess we're giving the impression that it's kind of a bit, you know, a bit of a mixed response, is a bit uneven. Maybe we can ask one question, and maybe we can just say like a yay or nay kind of recommendation, and then get a bit more stuck into it. But would you? Some have discussed and argued whether this would have been better as an actual TV show rather than as a movie. David Chase has been very adamant saying that he wanted this to be a movie. What do you all think? Do you think this would have been better as a TV show?
Yes. I feel like David Chase had been so ambitious because he's had the luxury of unfolding characters over many episodes before where they can slip in and out of key roles. And it didn't work on the big screen for me. I struggled to suspend my disbelief around makeup and lighting and things immediately. It just didn't have that kind of real gritty. I mean, like The Sopranos theme was filmed for the pilot on a handy cam, and they used it the whole time, like when they had $0. And that kind of, it's pretty raw. It gets prettier and slicker as the seasons go on. But yeah, that just felt, that didn't fit for me, that big screen vibe. And the duration, yeah, doesn't work for the ensemble. Or they didn't make it work.
You know, I've never met David Chase and certainly can't speak for him. My understanding of him professionally is that he has always wanted to be a filmmaker, and prior to making The Sopranos, had been trying to get a feature film off the ground, and had filmed the pilot as kind of a test screener for what would be turned into a 2-hour film that then HBO bought and turned into The Sopranos and all that. I find that very difficult to reconcile with the fact that this film was, like I said, very ambitious, and just it quite clearly needed to be drawn out into a television show. I think it could have been really well done. I think that like you said, Dicky Moltisanti is such an important character to the story of The Sopranos, and is a story I think could have been told really well. An emphatic yay, I think in another universe would have made it probably quite a good television show.
Yeah, I think the nature of the art form of television is you can get away with being clumsy and muddled because everything being serialized, you have the opportunity to unfurl all those threads, whether they're characterization or narrative, and I don't know, it just seemed really clumsy and muddled, and that reading up about David Chase, has had such a long storied history in television and the art form, and was even a showrunner in Northern Exposure and stuff like that, at the forefront of when, I guess, TV potentially was in that formative stage of big TV and, moving towards that. And I just felt like the whole time, regardless of, any of the baggage or stuff attached to not knowing any of the characters or any of the threads or little spots of fan service and stuff like that, it just seemed like the guy wanted to make a big movie but was under the confines of, I need to also make a Sopranos movie to service this fan base kind of thing, and didn't quite nail either of those things.
I haven't seen this film either, but he did make a film around the time of The Sopranos or afterwards, Not Fade Away, which did have James Gandolfini in it, which was all about a young teenager wanting to play rock and roll, and no one saw it. And I think I would agree that it's a bit of that kind of the devil that he sort of wants to make this film, and maybe, some of what Libby is saying as well could have explored that, but then had to kind of also put on the jacket of what about the fans? What about Tony Soprano? What about tying this into a legacy? And my personal reaction was I found it quite mixed as well. I think I started to just lose interest halfway through and got a bit tired of the kind of the fan servicey moments, because I was just it feels like everything is kind of that thing now, that people always use the gif of Rick Dalton from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood pointing at the TV. That feels like the prevailing mode now. Yeah. It's people recognizing things from other films in the films.
Just quick sidebar, prequels, how do we feel about them as a kind of a form of storytelling?
Yeah,
it's a really difficult kind of proposition to pull off, I reckon.
Well, I would argue that Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, is arguably film titled Star Wars that's ever been made. Certainly my personal favorite. I'm not even exaggerating here. No, I love that movie. They can be well done.
It's definitely the best title, as you said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last time I was on Movie Squad, I said that I loved that movie.
There you go. See, look, prequels have fans, and particularly when you don't know, when you watch them and you don't know that they're a prequel, potentially. I'll have to think a little bit about that. I mean, it's definitely interesting as well when they make the prequel afterwards, but it's, I just think of, it always feels like you're stuck,
I guess half of Godfather Part Two.
That's
probably the gold standard, but that's only half the film.
There's films that we love and TV series that we love that have, tandem narratives or flashbacks and things that are done really masterfully. And I guess there's no reason why, we go back in time and understand why a thing is a thing. And there's no reason why prequels as films can't be effective in the same way. I guess it's about, I really think it's about this whole exploiting the the fame of the notoriety of the existing characters, it's almost like you'd have to completely disregard that and just examine, you know, what's the most potent story? What's the most potent story here without having an impersonator of Silvio pulling a face?
Okay, can we talk about the actor that played Silvio in this film?
Well, yeah, let's look. This is...
That's spoiler
time. Let me warn all the audiences that I think we've given a good impression of what we think about this movie. You can see it or not. If you do decide to see it or you don't care, stick around because we're going to get into spoiler territory. So you have been warned.